From Chapter 2, A Question of Froth. The highest class of cacao drinks prepared by the Mexica, known as tlaquetzali, meaning precious thing, referencing the iridescent plumage of the quetzal bird that the Mexica prized, all had an enormous head of foam. In fact, the drinks may have been at least 50% foam to be eaten with a spoon, an account by one of the conquistadors, the first European witnesses to native Mesoamerican practices, describes how the cacao and spices were mixed with water in, as he says, basins with a point, possibly spouted clay vessels, then poured back and forth from one vessel into another to raise a head of foam, which was set aside. Then, quote, when they drink it, they mix it with certain spoons of gold or silver or wood, and drink it, and drinking it, one must open one's mouth, because being foam, one must give it room to subside, and go down bit by bit, end quote. That quote is taken from The Anonymous Conqueror, his account of the conquest of Mexico, written in 1566, requoted in Co. and Co. 1996. As we've seen, many contemporary Central American atolls feature a substantial layer of transplanted bubbles, which often comprise more than half the volume of the beverage. The early post-conquest Franciscan ethnographer Bernardino de Sahagún reported that after cacao had been ground and mixed with water, it was filtered before being aerated, just like popo. If cacao alone is mixed with water in the correct ratio and frothed, a modest head of level foam can be created, but illustrations from some Mexica codices show conical caps of froth protruding from goblets of cacao. The atole formulas suggest that certain mixtures of cacao, water and starch sources such as maize or wheat may produce more foam, but to achieve big Mr. Whippy-esque stacks of bubbles probably requires filtration in addition to the addition of botanical foaming agents, plants which produce a lather. The correct ratio of cacao to water to generate foams appears to be around 2 parts cacao by weight to 11 or 12 parts water by volume. For example, 20 grams of cacao in 110 to 120 mils of water. The cacao must be toasted and well ground, and if the water isn't too cold, then vigorous agitation with a molinillo will eventually raise a small but stable layer of foam. Technique is very important. The molinillo should be held firmly between flat palms at a 90 degree angle to the liquid, with the head of the whisk under the surface and the palms rubbed briskly back and forth to rotate the molinillo rapidly. A bowl or other receptacle with a larger surface area and high sides is required so that splashes are contained and the foam has room to spread out and build up without the bubbles being broken by the continual rotary action of the molinillo. Persistence is key, for most of the foamy cacao-based atoles require continuous or repeated frothing to generate a good head of foam. Foaming agents exponentially increase the volume of the froth, but working out which plants do what in a recipe is a process of deduction. For example, frangipani flowers, that's the flowers of Plumeria rubra, appear to be the principal foaming agent in the atole known as bupu. That frangipani flowers have foam-making attributes is probable because the foam of bupu is very large and stable, and because of some of the compounds in the plant discussed further in Chapter 6. Moreover, this froth is quite simple, made from cacao, piloncillo sugar, and both fresh and dried cacao suchil or flor de mayo, otherwise known as frangipani, so the frangipani flowers must be the volumizing additive, in addition to contributing their scent and medicinal properties, discussed further in Chapter 8 and Appendix B of the book. Although bupu is frothed with a molinillo today, in the early 20th century the foam was created with a pala, a special beating implement of simple design. Another clue that, like mole sauce, perhaps the molinillo isn't so much a Spanish innovation as an improvement or adaptation of a pre-existing indigenous invention. It's the end of that excerpt. An excerpt from Chapter 4, Chocolate Hearts, Sweet Blood. The native Kuna of the San Blas Islands in Panama are accustomed to drinking 5 or more cups of traditional whole bean drinking chocolate every day, around 40 cups of real, full-potency cacao-based drinks every week. Being made only from toasted cacao, water, banana, sugar, and spices, these beverages are naturally flavanol-rich. It's assumed that the average Kuna adult consumes around 900 milligrams of cacao polyphenols per day, equivalent to 75 grams of high-quality cacao seed. This is the equivalent of approximately 150 grams of dark chocolate per day, but without the added fat and less highly processed, so undoubtedly containing more polyphenols and probably with a better flavour to activity ratio too. The Kuna living in San Blas experience very little age-related high blood pressure, circulatory disease, or type 2 diabetes, but when they move to other regions and abandon their traditional diet and the copious quantities of ultra-high quality drinking chocolate that entails, these migrated Kuna acquire the same levels of diabetes and cardiovascular disease as any other average city-dwelling Western diet-consuming population. This observation is highly relevant because cardiovascular disease, or CVD, including heart attack and stroke, is the main cause of death in the so-called developed world, killing an estimated 17 million people every year. Which makes it interesting that there is now a growing body of clinical research suggesting that cacao is a highly effective preventive remedy for these disorders. Dark chocolate slightly lowers blood pressure and beneficially affects cholesterol profiles, raising HDL and lowering LDL and total cholesterol, indicating a slight reduction in the risk of heart attack or stroke. Even more significant is the effect of chocolate on the vascular endothelium, the inner lining of blood vessels, and on platelets, components of the blood which are central to the clotting process. The flavanols in cacao increase nitric oxide production in the vascular endothelium, dilating blood vessels and increasing blood flow throughout the body. The polyphenols also reduce platelet aggregation and clot formation and stimulate angiogenesis, the growth of new blood vessels. Essentially, cacao appears to be a hemodynamic marvel, simultaneously reducing almost every risk factor for cardiovascular disease. It dilates narrowed blood vessels, decreases the tendency to clot, reduces inflammation in the lining of blood vessels, lowers levels of blood lipids which can accumulate on damaged artery walls, stabilizes damaged red blood cells, strengthens the heartbeat, reduces blood pressure, and increases the rate of blood vessel repair. See Appendix A for full details of the studies conducted on cacao and chocolate. A meta-analysis is a type of study which rounds up all previous studies on the same subject, filters out the ones that weren't done to a high enough standard or where the results may be inaccurate or biased, and works out what the sum total of the evidence so far is saying. It should be no surprise that a 2011 meta-analysis of cacao's usefulness for preventing cardiovascular disease concluded that people who eat the most chocolate were 37% less likely to have a heart attack and 29% less likely to have a stroke than people who ate little or no chocolate, no matter what else they did. Smokers, the obese, people who didn't exercise, people who ate only fried food, they all had a similar reduction of relative risk if they ate more chocolate. This extraordinary finding is derived from several large surveys, a Boston, US study which used questionnaires and heart scans, cardiac computerized tomography to be exact, to assess 200,217 participants found an inverse association between frequency of chocolate consumption and coronary artery atherosclerosis, with the lowest risk of arterial disease for those who consumed chocolate 2 or more times per week. In a separate questionnaire-only study with 4,970 participants from the same population, frequency of chocolate consumption was also found to reduce risk of coronary heart disease even more significantly. The greatest reduction occurred for those who consumed chocolate 5 times or more each week, a 57% relative risk reduction compared to non-consumers. Eating chocolate 1 to 4 times a week reduced coronary heart disease risk by around 26%, but those who consumed chocolate only 1 to 3 times each month had the same risk as non-consumers. That's the end of that excerpt. Next excerpt from chapter 6, acne. It's common knowledge that chocolate causes spots. This claim appeared to have been disproven in 1969 when a group of researchers showed that people with acne experienced no deterioration when eating highly concentrated dark chocolate bars in comparison to cacao-free placebo or dummy bars. And a much smaller group of acne-free subjects had no skin problems when eating extra chocolate either. But more recent work has validated the original claim that chocolate, and dark chocolate in particular, which suggests that cacao itself may share the same properties, does slightly increase acne symptoms. Excuse me. A Turkish survey of 3,826 people with acne, comparing them with 759 acne-free people, found a minor positive association between acne and chocolate consumption, as well as other foods, including bread, green tea, milk, white sugar, ripe banana, ice cream, apples, oranges, and red meat. A 4-week study with 17 young and 16 middle-aged men given only 10 grams of dark chocolate to eat every day found that all the participants had increased numbers of gram-positive, that spot-causing bacteria, on their faces at the end of the trial, particularly the younger men, who also had measurably more skin cell shedding, perhaps indicating the body's attempts to get rid of colonizing bacteria a bit faster. So, distressingly, it appears that dark chocolate, and possibly cacao, may exacerbate acne, particularly in young men, although there's no evidence to suggest that chocolate causes acne. And, as we saw in Chapter 4, it appears to be otherwise very beneficial for skin health. That's the end of that excerpt. From Chapter 9, Theobroma Theology. There are many different Mesoamerican origin myths for cacao, and the oldest are lost in the mists of time. The most generic cacao origin story is that of the Mountain of Plenty, where Mesoamerican staple foods such as maize, cacao, patashtli, squash, black beans and chilies are first produced, or in the Mexica version, hidden, until they're discovered by the enterprising Quetzalcoatl and broken out by his celestial cronies like goodies from a piñata. In these legends, cacao is lumped in with basic botanical foodstuffs and delivered from an otherworldly warehouse with the other groceries after the divine equivalent of a ram raid on the store. But these aren't the only origin stories for cacao. When Hunhunapu is decapitated in the Popol Vuh, his head is planted in an underworld tree, causing it to produce the miraculous fruit which excites the interest of the death's god daughter, Shquik, then gets her pregnant. This tree is named as a calabash, or gourd tree, Crescentia cujete, which correlates with the Aztec-era Borgia Codex depiction of the tree of the south, the direction of the underworld, as a calabash. But there are several post-classic Maya ceramics which depict the tree with Hunhunapu's head in it as a cacao tree. In the Mexica Fejervari Maya Codex, cacao, not calabash, is the tree associated with the south cardinal direction, the, quote, wind-leaving place, end quote, and the underworld. Both cacao and gourd trees flower and fruit cauliferously, directly from the trunk, yet the tree into which Hunhunapu's head is placed is described as having sweet-tasting fruit, and gourds are inedible. Cacao fruit pulp, however, is delicious. Perhaps the reason that the gourd tree is associated with the underworld in Mesoamerican mythology is its connection to cacao, not the other way round. The apparently interchangeable nature of the two trees in folklore may be linked to cacao being drunk from calabash cups. hemispherical, sawn-off cranium-like dried gourds were the standard receptacles for frothy cacao-based beverages, and imbibing from these vessels was likened to drinking from the maize sun god Hunhunapu's skull, which is interestingly reminiscent of the Borgia Codex illustration of the birth of the universe, with the forces of creation exploding out of an effervescent death's head, a skull-shaped vessel containing a dark, foaming liquid. One Mexica legend says that Quetzalcoatl, patron god of kings, priests, magicians, and merchants, ruled the Toltecs during the last sun. As we saw earlier, this was probably a real-life king of Tula called Seacatlitopiltzin. He taught his people all the arts and sciences, cultivation and harvesting, astronomy, astrology, and how to measure time with the calendar. He also stole a bush from the gods, Theobroma cacao, and taught his people how to prepare it and make cacao-based beverages. The gods grew jealous of Quetzalcoatl's people and then angry on discovering the theft of cacao. So Quetzalcoatl's fraternal nemesis, Tezcatlipoca, came down to earth on the thread of a spider, disguised himself as a merchant, and visited the Toltec king. He convinced Quetzalcoatl to drink pulque, assuring him it was, quote, the drink of happiness, end quote. Quetzalcoatl got drunk and made a fool of himself, so he had to abdicate. Public drunkenness was a great sin in Mesoamerican culture, and went into exile in the East. As he walked, he noticed that all the cacao bushes he'd planted had become spiny maguey plants, the succulent cactus from which pulque is made, and he wept. This is why maguey, and not cacao, grows in the arid Mexican heartlands. He planted his last cacao seeds on the coast in present-day Tabasco, which is still a cacao-growing region, and departed into the sea. This myth reveals that the Mexica thought of their humanoid feathered serpent god as the patron of cacao, and Tezcatlipoca, the darker descendant of Cahuil, as a patron of maguey. But Tezcatlipoca appears as a merchant here, recalling both the Maya underworld merchant god, God El, who becomes a keeper of cacao, and the Mexica Pochteca, the traders for whom cacao was both currency and merchandise. There is another darker Mexica origin story for cacao. A princess stewards her warrior husband's estate and hides his treasure while he is away on a military campaign. In his absence, her husband's enemies, envious of his wealth, kidnap and torture her to extract the location of the treasure, but she keeps his secret. When she finally succumbs to death, Quetzalcoatl causes the cacao tree to emerge from her blood. The fruit, quote, hides the real treasure of the seeds, end quote, which are pink-tinted, strong and bitter, representing blood, virtue and, quote, the suffering of love, end quote. And that ends the excerpt and this extract from the book.